This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit immtt.com for more information. Hey everybody, we are back. This is Behind the Video, episode number 44, and we have a lot to talk about today. We've got, first of all, joining Tim Street. Hey Tim, how are you?
Doing well. I'm excited about our guest. Who's our guest?
Our guest is our regular guest, Bernie Sue, who's got some big news for us before we get into all the other stuff like FTC guidelines for bloggers and very important things keep you out of jail. But Bernie, you've got some news here. So you got this Kickstarter thing, and what happened?
So we launched a Kickstarter for Lizzie Band Diaries, the show they work on, which is the online vlog version of Pride and Prejudice. And we really launched it to do two things, which is to raise money to produce a DVD, because our fans wanted a DVD, and we didn't know where that production money was going to come from. And then to give the fans a kind of a mini series to munch on while we developed the second novel, to the follow up to Lizzie Band Diaries, and so we did a Kickstarter, and I'd say it's doing phenomenally well,
to say the least. What are you up to?
So as of this, we are up to $244,225. Our initial goal was $60,000, and the campaign is only 2 days old. Not even. It'll be 2 days old in about 2 hours.
And so you blew past that $60,000 in how many hours?
3 hours, four, maybe.
And so tell us about how you launched it. Like, did you just press a button, or did you put some time and effort into thinking about how you were going to design the look? I noticed with the Kickstarter campaign, there are some extra things that you could buy for hundreds or even $1,000. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you're in web video, you know of or you've done a Kickstarter campaign, and I that's like everybody. In my video, I feel. And so we, as in Hank and I, did a lot of kind of planning. I mean, Hank's done a few Kickstarter campaigns in the past anyway, so he's a pro. So he's the one who did all the art that you see in the campaign, kind of like the art that splits up the sections. And then with the perks, we kind of designed them together, and I had to pull some of the team members, make sure they're cool about signing things, and kind of some of the more gimmicky perks, like the voicemails, just make sure they're cool with them and just limiting the amount to so it's not out of control, so we're not spending days recording voicemails to people. And then we put that together, and then so we were all ready to go. And so this has been going on for about a week and a half, just like in pieces, in parts. And when we launched it, it was Friday morning Pacific, and I was the one who pushed launch button at around somewhere between 10:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I was like, all right, there it goes. I'll just text message Hank that it's out so he can tweet about it. And I'm going to drive to the office where I actually talked to Tim over while I was driving. and got to the office. And by the time I got to the office, the word had spread. And so... So it was funny that the main engine, as in the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, like Twitter account, Lizzie Bennet Diaries Facebook account, had not promoted it at all. And I think it was like, by that time it had reached its goal. Like, it was crazy. It's remarkable in that sense, where you're just watching it go. Because I was driving to the office in LA traffic, and when I got to the office, I had to jump on an interview right away. A phone interview, and so I wasn't able to kind of like tell the office. I was like, hey, just so you know, this thing just launched. And so by the time I got out of the interview, it was at 55 or something like that. And so when the office finally found out about it, they were basically watching it as it passed the goal, like before their eyes. So,
just zinged right past that $60,000.
Yeah, like I think they loaded up the Hank's video, which is a 3-minute video talking about the project. And while they're watching the video, it passed the goal. So
amazing.
That was really cool.
I'm looking
It's amazing. And I'm looking at it now. You have 3,600 backers, which means that 3,649 people have given some kind of money. Mm-hmm. And most interesting is that you would think there's a $10 one where you get a thank you in the DVD liner notes. That's among the least popular. Most people, it looks like, gave into the $55 or more category. Looks like almost half of the folks did that. And it looks really, from looking at it, the majority of the backers gave over $55 to this. So that's got to feel pretty good to have your fans that crazy about the product that or the production that they're willing to part with that much money.
Especially when they're young women who have no money that are living home with their parents. No, I'm kidding. No,
right.
there are a lot of those. Well, I guess it's even. I mean, here's the great thing about this Kickstarter is that I think it's product based. Like, it's a product. You know, when you've seen those before in the past that aren't necessarily web video based, it's really product based. It's like we're raising money for a DVD because we know the fans want a DVD. We just don't know how many of them. Clearly, it's a lot, right?
But, right.
And so, in the DVD, just why it's so expensive, why it's a $55 DVD, is that, and that's why it's that's the as the most because that's the base level of getting the DVD. You know, if you want the DVD, you have to give at least $55. And why it's such an expensive DVD is because there's 10 hours of content. Like, that doesn't fit on one DVD. And then also you have to add other things like commentary and things. So it's going to be like a pretty big, box set. I mean, relative. But it's going to be a box set. It's not going to be like this one thing. So with that...
Do you think making the DVD will be as fun as the Kickstarter campaign?
No, I'm glad I'm not doing it. I basically insisted that I, like, hey, I am not the producer on this DVD. Like, I'm not a producer, but I'm one, or a DVD producer. Let's find someone else to do it. Let's raise the money to find someone else to do a good job.
That's great.
We clearly have it now. But yeah, I think that's kind of our bread and butter line for this is that because there's a clear thing. It's like we're not asking you. I mean, we are in a sense, but it's not like, oh, please give us money. It's
right.
Just, if you want the DVD, there it is.
Right, $55 bucks, and it's yours.
Yeah, it's yours, and you're a part of it. So
it seems like there's a lot of thought and an experience that went into this Kickstarter campaign, and it seems like this isn't just a I think a lot of people think about Kickstarter and they're like, oh, I'm going to make a Kickstarter and I'm just going to go do it, and they put it up in an afternoon or in an evening or something. But clearly, you guys had experience in this, and it's kind of like there's a lot of different things that you guys brought to the table in making this a successful Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I get to give a lot of credit to Hank because he's done this quite a bit. I mean, he did the Project for Awesome for years now, and that's an Indiegogo campaign. So I just kind of doing the research of what makes a successful Kickstarter campaign. What pretty much everybody says to like really plan, like it's really the planning that happens. There were things where like we had these kind of gimmicky perks that were kind of one of a kind that we were going to add. We still may add them mid campaign, but we were going to add them to kind of revitalize the campaign. 2 weeks in case the campaign stalled. Just to draw more attention to it. And it was like, we had thought that out. We're like, we're not going to release these perks yet until later because.
Are those still coming out?
They may be, but it was kind of like they're kind of props from the show type thing. So they're really just like single things, But it would just draw draw attention back to the campaign rather than that single perk raising all this money. These are things that we had planned out, and now we're kind of behind the story of our life on the show, behind the wave again. Where we were like, Hank and I would be texting each other, and I'd be like, hey, are you good signing more of these journals? Because
7,000 of them?
Yeah, because we just sold out that perk. Like, I'm okay signing more if you're signing more. And he's like, yeah, damn, I can sign them. I can sign for days. I'm like, all right, more journals.
Well, that is excellent. And how do you budget for this? Because now there is some overhead, right? You have to produce DVDs. I'm assuming you're not going to be sitting by your DVD burner putting in 7,000 discs here. So somebody's going to have to contract out and do all this. So how do you budget for this? And how do you budget when you have a success? Because you went from anticipating maybe selling $60,000 worth of or even less than that, of material to, you know, $200,000-$300,000. What does that do for your planning and budgeting? Because now people have an expectation of receiving a product in the mail.
Well, I mean, good thing for us, and this is a story, when, you know, Kickstarter now, I don't say this before, but Kickstarter does this thing where their admin team looks at your campaign and kind of responds to it. Like, it's ready to go, you click submit, not launch, submit.
Oh, so they approve it first.
And they approve it first. And so when we click submit, they came back to us, it's like, wow, we would suggest that you tone this down, because producing a DVD and a series, you know, is a lot to do. You know, you may not realize it's a lot to do. And then I messaged this to Hank when he came in. He was like, really? That they sent that to us? And I'm like, yeah. So and he goes, I'm going to reply. And he replies, and he says this very eloquent message about, like, hey, you know, I just wanted to let you know that we've done this before. We did the project for Awesome. That raised $400,000 for charity. And we have a company called DFTV.com that fulfills these things. That's a staff of three people working full time that fulfills millions of dollars in orders per year in fulfillment, like these products. So like they can clearly do it. And so then they're like, oh yeah, go ahead. But they were aware of it too. They're asking the question that you just asked. It's like, who the heck is going to be mailing all these things? It's going to be, are you two going to walk 1,000 DVDs down to the post office and mail them off, you know? So
they actually not interrogated you, but they really wanted to make sure that you were capable of delivering on this before they launched it.
Yeah, exactly.
And they wanted to make sure you were prepared for success.
Yeah. And that's great. And good for them. Like not knocking it at all. I think that's a really cool like block there, because like as you kind of alluded to in the beginning of this conversation, a lot of Kickstarters are just thrown together, you know.
Right, and they don't think about it, don't plan ahead, and all of a sudden they've got all this money coming in and no idea what it's really going to cost them to deliver that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you think about, like, you producing the DVD, the content, what's in the DVD, that's a fixed, right? Well, it's not a fixed. It'll be a number and it's a constant, right?
Right.
But like, authoring 1,000 DVDs versus authoring what is probably now 3,000 DVDs, that's a big difference. In printing, and then also shipping. You know, if each of those things costs $5 each to ship.
Right, there's time and labor and packaging and labeling.
Customer service and all that stuff. So there's an inherent cost rise after this. So it's not like, oh, we hit 60,000 and now we have $180,000 in profit. That's not true. It kind of goes up together. I mean, yes, that we have more profit, sure, but like it's not a clean 100%. I can't even tell you what it is, you know?
Right.
And there's also kind of like, you look at the whole thing too, it's like, I think there's an expectation now, and I don't know, you know, I'm not making promises, but I feel there's an expectation now with the quality of the DVD, right? Mm-hmm. Like originally, we weren't sure if we were going to offer closed captions, and now I think we have to.
You need to, right.
Right? Like,
right. So there's a huge cost increase there. I guess you have the scripts though, so it's not hard to interleave it, right?
Yeah, but it's also like we have YouTube closed captions, so like mm-hmm. we can kind of start from there and so we have a good base. But still, someone has to do that,
right?
And then you have things like the Bridge series. It's like, you know, that we had a plan. We had a kind of a plan to do kind of a very lean version of that series. And I'm not saying we need to blow the thing out, but it's like I think there's an expectation now to make it a little more fuller, you know?
Right. Right. So because of these higher expectations, and they know that you're taking in more money, that you need to really probably focus on making the product better than what you thought it was initially going to be like.
Yeah, totally, totally. Because like, you know, we said you know, here's the split, right? It's DVD, it's the Bridge series, and it's bonuses for the team, right? And now, as the money goes up more and more, like I feel that all three of those need to go up together. Like you can't have one go up and not the other two,
sure.
Or two go up and not the third, right? So. It's not an equal pie of everything, but there's a one point where it's just gratuitous, like you're just doing commentary for days for no reason, right?
Sure,
But at the same time, it's you want to find that balance, because they're buying the investment is into a product, into two different products really, and to the brand, you know.
Right. Of these are fans that love you and what you do, right? You don't want to disappoint them. So
yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of pressure here to deliver something that is going to meet or exceed their expectations.
Exactly. Totally. Exactly. So you everything, all three things that we promised the money's going to needs to improve with it. So, there's a ripple effect too, because it is a brand. Like Lizzie Bennet Diaries is a brand. The format's a brand. The Bridge series is a brand. The DVD, and then the people involved in the show, whether they're involved in just Lizzie Bennet or the following series, because some of the team is coming with us to the second series. Or the Bridge series, and then the second series after that. So, like, all these need to kind of go up together, all rise together right. with the tide, you know. And right. again, within reason of the levels, because you know, I'm just saying, like, I don't know how much you know what goes in the second series, but like, there's admin costs and business administration and stuff like that. So, you just when you have all this stuff to divide, you're like, okay, you got to figure out how to do this. It's kind of like you know, when you do a business, you just don't take everything out for profit. You kind of put it back.
Right.
right.
Yeah, right. Well, you need more to continue developing the product. So before we move on, though, I just wanted to ask you one last question. And this relates to somebody who I love to watch is Hannah Hart, who has that My Drunk Kitchen and a few other things on YouTube. And she decided to go with Indiegogo as opposed to Kickstarter. And I think it may have not been necessarily a decision, but perhaps the fact that she wasn't selling a product that could be sold like Kickstarter requires people to do. She went the Indiegogo route to fund a tour that she's going to do across the country. And what a success story. We could have a whole show about her, actually. But you know, why would someone choose Indiegogo over Kickstarter? Did you look at both and decide Kickstarter was the better option for what you chose?
Well, I always like Kickstarter better because I'm an all or nothing guy, right? I'm just like, you know, because Indiegogo, you get whatever it is. You know,
right.
Whatever. Like, if you don't make the goal, well, you still get it.
It's I
like,
see.
Well,
right.
That's still fun.
Right.
Like,
right
let's just go for it. Like, that's just like all or nothing. Go. Like, you know, put like if you're gonna ask the audience to be part of the game, let's make it a game. Mm-hmm. You know, right? So I think there was a previous advantage to Indiegogo because I don't think up until recently, that Kickstarter could accept international.
Okay.
So I think there was that, but I mean I don't know why she chose Indiegogo over Kickstarter, but she got it.
I think it may have been because she wasn't selling anything; that it was just to promote, you know, to produce something that you know that was going to be given away for free. I don't know exactly how I think she had some issues with it. Because I think her intent was to start on Kickstarter, but we should get her on the show. I think it'd be kind of interesting to.
She's very awesome.
Yeah.
In many ways, so
we'll track her down.
Yeah, we'll get her on.
Married.
Get her on the show, and we'll get some viewers out of it, too. So speaking of viewers, Tim, and Bernie, I hope you'll stick around as we go through our top list here and then go into some of the other stuff we're talking about. Television shows this week. We'll just go through the
Let's list. Let's blow through them, man.
Blow through it, man. Number five, 2.5 Men. It's almost like we could do this every week, and it's the same. That horrible trash, The Bachelor, is 4 and 3, so I guess trash sells. American Idol is back in the number 2 spot, and Big Bang Theory, thankfully, is number 1 on CBS.
How many viewers did it have? Like 6 million?
6 million, which
That's
is
nothing, right?
Which is nothing, because like if you look at the cable stuff this week, Wizards, this is the Alex versus something on Disney. I don't watch Disney yet. I will soon. 5.8 million viewers there. So right off the bat, the number 5 show on cable is almost as good as the top on network. Duck Dynasty on A&E, 4 and 3, 7.9 and 8.2 million viewers on that show, 2 spots on Wednesday. The Walking Dead, my favorite show, 10.8 million, tied with The Bible again. So
The Bible on history. Now, this show's got a lot of controversy because the actor who plays Satan in it resembles the President of the United States.
Yes, I've heard that, and there's some controversy over that for sure, so I don't know what's developing out of that. I know that we had a similar issue on Game of Thrones when apparently they used a rubber model of George Bush's head for a decapitation, which they did end up changing, but I don't know how they're going to deal with that issue on The Bible. But A&E did issue a statement saying that they did not intend to make it look like it was the president. So,
yeah, and it's almost as controversial as Verizon wants to pay for programming based on actual viewers.
And this,
Bernie, did you hear about that one, Bernie?
Yeah, I did hear about it. I did not read about it, so tell me.
Well, this is big because, as you know, our cable bills are ridiculously expensive. And I hate to take the side of the cable company, but I'm going to have to here because some of these fees are the result of what networks charge cable companies to carry their stuff. And because there's more competition in cable television with satellite, two or three different satellite providers, Verizon, Fios, and a whole bunch of other things out there now, these stations or these channels say, you will carry ESPN for $12 per subscriber per month, regardless of whether or not those people watch it, and you will offer it on your basic tier, or we're not going to sell it to you anymore, and then we'll tell all of your customers to call you and complain or go to Dish. And so Verizon's saying, hey, enough's enough already. Our customers want to pay by what they actually watch, as opposed to forcing everyone to pay. Because I'm paying for stuff that I don't watch. I pay for ESPN. I don't watch that much sports. And nevertheless, I am paying through my monthly subscription fee a lot of money that eventually goes back to these cable channels. And Verizon is looking to change this into a new arrangement where they will only pay for those who are actually viewing it, or perhaps almost on an a la carte basis. I guess they're starting with, according to the Wall Street Journal, with mid-tier and smaller programmers who actually would stand to benefit from this, because a lot of times they can't afford to get on the basic cable channel offering from these cable providers. So we'll see where that goes. Tim, what are your thoughts? Are you hearing anything on this?
Well, it's one of those things that it's going to shake out, and we're going to see major disruption going on here, much like, there's disruption in the box office as well. One of our other stories this week is that the National Association of Theater Owners president and CEO John Fithian told reporters on Thursday that there's some doldrums that can be blamed on the lack of diversity, because there's a glut of R-rated movies that's causing box office downturn.
And that is intriguing. And why do they call themselves NATO? I mean, I know it's their acronym, but I was reading this thinking, like, why the heck does NATO care about what Hollywood ratings are? until I realized it was the National Association of Theater Owners. But he's right. I mean, there's families going to the movies is an event now. It's you can get probably a better experience at home sometimes than you can actually get at the theater. I don't have sticky floors at my house like my local theater does. So they need to diversify their offerings. And, quite honestly, like, we're seeing a lot of these old movies come back as 3D movies. So Jurassic Park, I just saw a commercial for that the other day. So, go back to see the movie you saw 15 years ago. I think Sony could do it.
What's funny about that trailer is that it really makes Jurassic Park look dated.
It does.
It's so funny. It's like, I don't think of Jurassic Park as being an old movie, but you watch the trailer and you're like, ooh, that's dated.
Yeah, it does look. It just looks a little old and matted, if that's a word. You guys are better on these acronyms than I am, but it was just like, wow, that just doesn't look that great in HD. So
yeah, there's stuff looks better on YouTube.
It does. Now, YouTube this week, we have our top five of the week. The fifth one at 3.5 million views is, looks like he's kind of like an online prankster, and he sees two police officers sitting on a picnic table. And he sets a camera up, and then he jumps over them. And then, of course, the police aren't crazy about this, especially when they learn that he's filming it. And,
they arrested him.
And arrested him. And quite honestly, I think he had it coming. I don't know what you think, Tim.
Well, I
saw this video too, so.
I don't think he did anything illegal. I think it was a situation where the cops were provoked, they were embarrassed, their pride was hurt, and they arrested the guy.
I was reading somewhere. I mean, like, is there something where it's like, you can't record a cop or something like that? You can't just like.
This is a free country that we live in, and as long as you're on public property, and you're allowed to videotape and take photos.
And actually, this has been a point of controversy because in my state, there's been some work on a bill to really solidify the fact that you're allowed to videotape in public, because there have been many instances where police have arrested people for recording them in public and forced them to erase cards or tapes or whatever, which it shouldn't be. I mean, as journalists, and I think the term journalist now extends to the public, especially who are recording an event as it happens. But there have been many instances where, the police wrongly asked someone to delete something and arrested them because of it. I think in this case, this kid was clearly instigating them, which is a whole different story. But You know, nonetheless, it certainly got a little out of hand, and the video is up to 4 million views, and quite a lot of discussion going on in the YouTube channel about it also. But I mean, I think if you look at it, I mean, he'll probably get out of this with a misdemeanor, or probably pay a fine and be done with it. But you know, instigating events.
I don't think he should. I don't think he did anything illegal.
I don't think he did anything illegal by taping it. I mean, you could make the argument
there
maybe
is
that
no law that says you can't jump over a cop.
It's probably true.
I'm sure there's something where you can interpret you about threatening a cop, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those things.
You know what? It's just a prank, and there was no criminal activity there. I'm not a lawyer, but I don't see a law being broken here. I really don't.
I think there probably will be a law later.
Yep. You arrested him. That's mm-hmm. it.
I think you're right. I think that's exactly it. So we'll have to follow this case. I don't know if there was any press about it, but maybe we'll take a look in a few weeks and see if see what ended up happening as a result of it. Number four, Preguntas de Twitter. I don't think I saw this one, so maybe
four questions for Twitter. It's in Spanish. So check it out if you understand Spanish.
And I guess you could probably do a translation from the script there. Well, 4.3 million people understood Spanish enough to watch it. And it's funny, as I just clicked on the video, the Jurassic Park trailer played.
Nice.
Justin Timberlake mirrors at number three, 8.9 million views up right now. This is a Vivo video.
It's very sweet. It's a very sweet video about an old couple remembering when they were younger. And you don't see Justin for featured for the longest time, but a fun one. And then number two, Pitbull with Christina Aguilera. Look, two Mickey Mouse Club cast members in the top five this week. She's got a music video there. It just feels like a regular music video. I don't get anything out of it. Did you?
I got nothing out of it.
Yeah, and then Guy Punches Street Performer, number one. I didn't see that. Like, this one has a great title. Right?
Yeah.
And then you watch it and it's kind of like,
Now, why did he punch the street performer?
He gets punched by.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's a street performer. He's like one of those guys that's painted in silver and he's,
right.
You know,
and this guy starts
like
poking
robot.
His face and stuff.
The guy starts like giving him a wet willy and stuff like that, and then eventually he just hits him.
Yeah, I'm watching this now.
He could be arrested. That guy could.
Yeah, I think that could certainly get you in jail there. Now, what's funny is this guy is painted like all silver, and I had a friend of mine in college that was like a one-man glee club and decided to paint himself with tempera paint, which doesn't breathe very well. We almost had to take him to the hospital for heat exhaustion. So choose your paint wisely, and that guy had it coming with the getting socked by the street performer. So now here's something interesting, and it's funny because as Tim, as you know, our independent media network, we sell a lot of advertising, and we've been starting to help people sell ads on YouTube, and everyone is surprised to hear that YouTube is as big as Facebook, if not bigger, when it comes to traffic. You know, they often swap that number two position over time, and this month YouTube hit 1 billion monthly users. That's billion with a B. Bernie, you make your living here with this, so the audience just keeps growing, right?
Absolutely. I fully expect it to keep growing. You know, we're talking about the connected generation. You're talking about, you know, kids who grow up with a mobile device in their hand. That's not a TV. where's the quickest access to the video entertainment? YouTube. So it makes a lot of sense to me that it be that. And also Facebook is, I think, aging. The audience is aging, and it's just not as cool to be on Facebook. And you'll see, I think, a changing of the guard or a shifting, you know. I mean, you know, Tim has two teenagers. Like, ask them. Ask him. What do you think? So, like, you know, the is Facebook going up or down?
What I'm curious about is the social aspect of YouTube. I mean, with your show, you have such a huge following, and your fans are really active. How do you see them use YouTube socially as opposed to Facebook?
Well, I think, you know, we get far more engagement metrics, meaning likes and favorites and comments, those type of things on YouTube, just being nature because of the video. So I know they're talking to each other, and here's the good thing about YouTube is that you have the video component of you can reply, you can make video responses and stuff like that. So that's how they're doing stuff. Like, I saw this video the other day of people replying or, like, you know, filming themselves watching episodes, getting the responses of them being all shocked and reacting to the scene. So you see them use it like that. And, of course, you see them comment and talk to each other. And I think that's what we're most accustomed to seeing. Problem with that is that YouTube's comment system is not very good for threading. Like, it's very hard to follow a conversation.
And it's hard, actually, to respond to comments all the time as well, because you often have to go back into the video. There's different comment response methods in using a mobile device versus not. You can't reply to a comment on the YouTube app, right? So
yeah.
It doesn't work all that great. I wonder, too, though, you know, there's been talk of this great merger between Google Plus and YouTube. It would seem like they have one failure, if you will. I mean, Google Plus works for what we're using it for, but the one successful thing on Google Plus is YouTube, which is their most successful social media platform. Tim, do you think it would be controversial for YouTube and Google Plus to merge? Would people freak out over that?
Yeah, I think they would freak out just because Google Plus doesn't have the street cred yet that YouTube has. Although, if they just took the features of Google Plus and made them available on YouTube,
right? They'd never go back to Google Plus.
it's kind of like Google. There was a Google Video for a while. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember that. Actually, I used it quite a bit because when it started, I was doing some cable access stuff, and it was a great place to put our cable access shows because it was. It was long length at that point because I think YouTube was putting in that length restriction pretty early, and it was initially I felt it was a better platform for longer form content than YouTube was at the time. And
they tried selling stuff there. I mean, this is back in the early days of Leo Laporte. I don't know if you you're a fan of Leo or not.
Oh, I am a huge fan.
There you are. So Leo's doing something this week. What's he doing?
Well, he is, according to paidcontent.org, starting a new show called This Week in YouTube, which is continuing his This Week in Tech moniker. And he's going to be highlighting trending videos as well as news about YouTube. And Leo is kind of an inspiration to a lot of folks. First of all, he's got great shows with great relevant content to what I'm interested in, which is why I started listening to him in the first place. But the fact that he's been doing this himself without venture capital money. He's built a pretty sizable studio. And he's the exception, of course, Tim, right? Because he had an audience that he brought from traditional media with him to this platform. But it's amazing what he's built. And he's a nice guy, too. I met him at New Media Expo. He was gracious enough to take a picture with a million people, including me, when we were bugging him there. So, Tim, what do you have to think about all this stuff?
You know, Leo is an inspirational guy. I mean, he really I first ran into him at the podcast New Media Expo in 2005 in Ontario, California. And he was giving the keynote there, and it was very inspirational. You know, he was already doing an audio podcast, all the things that I was trying to figure out how to do in video. He was already doing it in audio, and, you know, a real pioneer in this space. So it'll be interesting to, you know, see how his show goes on YouTube. But he's not the only one who's like coming from another place and jumping on YouTube. Looks like Simon Cowell is also doing something.
Yes, he is. He is going to be looking to find new YouTube stars. And Bernie, let me ask you this question, because you're producing stuff with YouTube stars in them. How does Simon Cowell translate to the more independent nature of YouTube and video production there?
I will say that I don't think what you just said sounds like it sounds familiar. For you know, kind of a big media person to come in and go, like, I'm going to discover these unknowns and make them big. I mean, it's kind of what Ellen has been doing.
Their TV show, right.
Yeah, so I guess it's like, well, YouTube you know, independent, non-independent, I think that line is blurring more and more with YouTube the further we go along. In case in point, you can look at the top 100 subscribers right now versus if you could find some archive or something to see what they were a year ago. And you see a lot more mainstream artists, mainstream brands on that list. You know, before it was kind of the indie community of like those vloggers or something like that. So I'm more the minority in the community who thinks this, but I'm just like I don't have a problem with it. I feel like it's something that was inevitable.
It almost raises the platform to the point where it's getting more, you know, people that may not have been on YouTube or looking at YouTube before, it gets them in the door where they might find your stuff, right?
Yeah, and I understand the fear of it from the indie point of view, where they've been working so hard for so long, and then all these people just come in out of nowhere with their big dollars and go, oh yeah, we're the kings now. I understand that fear. My kind of response to it is that it's really about quality of your content. If your content's good, you'll hold. If you really have longevity, you'll hold. You know, if anything, it'll get you to be better. And that's kind of my my mantra going into this whole thing. And you see, like, you know, there are the YouTubers that have held serve. Smosh, Phil DeFranco, those guys have held their audience pretty consistently. You know. So the great ones will hold, and then the others will, you know, kind of taper off a bit, and
that'll be it.
That's light.
It's like anything. It's like television, right? The viewers vote with their views.
Do you think as this new type of content comes to YouTube that it'll need to be explained to people as if they're five?
I think it'll be need to explain to people us and older.
Well, Reddit is here to help because they are launching an original web series called Explain It Like I'm Five, and that's a popular meme on Reddit. Tim, is this the first time that Reddit is producing something that is not?
It seems like it is, but I don't know for sure. I haven't done my homework on this one.
Go ahead.
The funny thing about that, you say produce it like them five. I go, like, if you gave someone who was 75 an iPad and they never saw one before, they'd be completely lost for the first, you know, until you explain it to them. The iPad's pretty good about being, like, easy to use, of course. Right. It's one of the greatest UI devices in history.
But if you give it to a five-year-old, they have no problem.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. Like, just toss it to them. So in other words, maybe explain it like I'm 36, right?
Yeah, whatever.
If you check out the Reddit video, the one that I saw was it almost seemed a little mean-spirited. It's two adults, a man and a woman, have a handful, maybe four or five-year-olds, and they're explaining existentialism to them.
Oh, that's funny. And awesome. They actually have the kids in the room with them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
It's a little mean-spirited, but it's funny. But I guess that's kind of Reddit's brand, though, right?
Yeah, it is. That mean-spirited humor there is there. And Tim, one last topic this week, and this is something I thought you might find interesting. There's a story here about somebody writing. I neglected to get the link on here to this story, so we'll have to find that and put it in the show notes. But there was someone who put a Amazon book up that got on the bestseller list and they didn't make a lot of money. What's that all about? Because I guess Amazon has some different ways to distribute your book, including that freebie thing, right?
Yeah, so I guess you can make a bestseller made of nothing.
Yeah, right. just like the existing publishing world, right?
You know, it's like the web video world, right? So
right.
All these people giving away videos for free, and I have yet to find a landlord or a mortgage company that will take payment in YouTube views. Once that exists, we're all going to be doing really well.
Paying with Bitcoins or something like that. So,
just
be sure you understand and plan ahead. And I think, you know, if you look at back to our original discussion with Bernie here, that, you know, you've got to really push further out. And, you know, the money may not just come from heaven here. You've got to really do something like, you know, develop your audience, build a Kickstarter to bring.
Have a cash register.
Yep, the cash register, as we've talked about many times. Charge people money for your product when they like it. So now, speaking of charging money, we're going to combine our topic of the week and our app of the week. And this week, the app will be a website that Tim found. And Bernie, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too, even though you're not necessarily doing this kind of work, but I think it might apply to product placement and that kind of thing. So about a year or two ago, maybe 3 years ago, the FTC started working on, this is the Federal Trade Commission in the United States, working on ways to ensure that people who are placing products or giving free product in exchange for content are disclosing those things properly. And basically, this goes back to the days of payola in radio, where it was illegal or is illegal for someone to pay a radio station for consideration of a song and that kind of thing. And of course, people will find many ways around it and loopholes and everything else. But bottom line is that they weren't doing a lot of this on the web, and they weren't doing a lot of things to make sure that bloggers were being honest about the products they were reviewing and everything else. So the FTC revised their rules, and I'm seeing a lot of this. And I saw this in New Media Expo with a lot of people focusing on this this influencer marketing, where a lot of it is not necessarily paying for advertising on a site, but giving a blogger who maybe has a little bit of traffic free product to review, or in some cases paying somebody to review a product favorably. And this is certainly not illegal, but the Federal Trade Commission is wanting to make sure that people are not being misled. And that means that if you are to get a free product to review on your website, even if you review it unfavorably or give it a mediocre review, you need to disclose that that product was given to you for free. And a lot of folks don't know that they need to do this. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean you as the blogger are going to get fined. It's more about your clients, who were the people that are advertising with you or are giving you these products, because they're the ones that could actually be fined if you're not following these practices properly. So the important thing is that every post needs to have some disclosure to say where it came from. Now, if you bought the product yourself, you're free and clear. However, even if the item that is sent to you is a review unit and you gain some benefit from the use of that unit over the course of the week. So a great example would be a cell phone. You know, if you get a cell phone for a week to review, if that phone has service that you're not paying for, you probably should disclose it. The phone was given to you for free and you had a week of free phone calls on it. You also want to disclose if perhaps an advertiser took you out to lunch in order to talk about a product that you were going to review. You want to make sure that those disclosures are in every post. So you can't just put up an about screen somewhere that's buried on your site saying, yeah, all the stuff you see here I got for free. It probably wouldn't hurt to put it there, but you also need to associate that with every review that you do. Now, Tim, you know that I've been doing these little product reviews on YouTube, and I've been doing that in the description. It's probably better for me to say that I'm also getting some free product in the actual video, so that if someone's watching on a mobile device and doesn't read the description, that disclosure is available. In fairness to me, I am in most cases not getting these free products directly from the manufacturer. I'm getting them from Amazon to review as part of the Amazon Vine program, but nevertheless, I do indicate that I do that. Another item, and I know I'm going on here quite a bit, but this is important stuff. If you're doing affiliate marketing, and this is, by the way, when you provide the link to Amazon where you get the 4% or 6% back on the sale, you should be disclosing that you are going to gain from that link. And that's something a lot of folks do not do, but you really should do that, because you are gaining something and you have a relationship with the website that you're sending people to. And the last thing is that Google now is starting to penalize folks who are running paid content. So sometimes, and this is a catch-22, that disclosing the fact that you're getting paid content or creating paid content might actually reduce the search traffic that you get for your site. And it's unfortunate, but I think there's got to be a little bit of a conversation with Google on this. I have my video traffic is fine. And again, I don't get, most of the stuff that I get is through Amazon, and I'm not requesting this of manufacturers. In fact, the manufacturers aren't even allowed to contact us directly in the Amazon program. But I've seen on the website where I post these videos and some text that Google must have flagged it as a paid content site, and my traffic is gone. I mean, overnight, it was, you know, I was getting several hundred thousand search impressions a day, and then it went from that to zero, just like overnight. So
Penguin.
What's that?
Penguin,
yep. It just crashed. So you need to be really careful about that. Now, one of the things that's difficult to do is to disclose these things on Twitter. And Twitter has become a place where a lot of folks are centering around stars and popular culture and that kind of thing. And they are being paid to tweet, like, you know, I want a Jamba Juice. I'm going to go down and get one. Now, the FTC recently updated their rules to make sure that people know that they need to disclose, even in something as small as a tweet, that you're being paid to make that tweet. And Tim, there's a website for this to help you out with these kinds of disclosures, right?
Yeah, it's cmp.ly. So check it out. Full disclosure, this whole company exists because of a tweet that I did in 2009.
Okay, you got to tell me about this one.
Yeah, so I just tweeted that there needs to be a short code to say that you comply when the FTC was first coming out with this. I don't remember what the exact tweet was. And the CEO, Tom, he hadn't started the company, you know. He got the idea to start the company from my tweet. And he's very vocal about telling people that. It's pretty funny. I ran into
Does he give you a cut of that, or is it just...
I get no cut. I get nothing. He started this company off
of a tweet. This is not a paid endorsement for Comply, right?
Yeah, it's quite the... It's Comply. And it's quite the opposite happened. I did a tweet. They ran with my tweet and turned it into a company, but they do offer some things, and they're gonna launch a new product pretty soon that will allow you to do more things than just comply. So I don't know when they're gonna be announcing that, but pretty cool company. You know, but you can't trust me because, you know, I have an affinity for it.
You were the inspiration. It would have been better if you were the guy that they gave 10% of whatever their revenue might be from that. But
there you go.
Yeah. So, but it's important, and I checked them out, and it's kind of a neat thing, because what they do is, you know, in many cases, if the tweet itself is the paid content, that comply link will bring someone to a page where it fully discloses the relationship between that person and the advertiser. And I think really the bottom line for all of this stuff is that you want, if you have a relationship with a company, whether it's a one-time thing where they sent you a thing to review and let you keep it, or something where you're getting product on a regular basis, you can maintain your partiality. You can, you know, of course, you know, be able to do all these things, but it's really important, not only just to comply with the law, but it's also important for your viewers to know what those relationships are, because, you know, I think it is misleading to get things for free and not disclose that the product you're reviewing was given to you for free. And, you know, in my own case with the Amazon products that I review, again, these are coming, you know, through Amazon, and I'm not always so keen on them, but a lot of times I pick things that I like. But I think it's important for my viewers to know that, you know, yes, in many cases, the things I'm reviewing were things that were given to me for review on Amazon's site. However, I do review a lot of stuff that I buy too. So, you know, I think my viewers hopefully understand that, and I try to make it clear, and we'll continue to do so. But that'll keep you out of trouble. It'll keep your the brands out of trouble. And if you're a brand looking to do that, that's important. Tim and Bernie, any consideration on product placement in a video? How does that work?
I don't know. because when you're talking about it, I'm just kind of like we've done stuff where we've linked to dresses that the characters have worn, mm-hmm. you know, in descriptions and stuff, and those dresses were loaned to us. We did not, you know, we didn't keep them. The actress didn't keep the dresses at all. We linked to those dresses, and we probably sent thousands. I know this. We sent thousands of people over those dresses.
So that's promotional consideration. And, you know, in TV shows, game shows, you know, promotional consideration is listed in the show credits. So it's definitely something that it isn't in your best interest necessarily to do it, but in the people loaning you the dresses, it should be part of the deal, is that you have to somehow mention that that was done for promotional consideration, because they're the ones who are going to get in trouble with the Federal Trade Commission.
That's right.
Not so much you.
That's right. It's very important to know, and this doesn't leave any blogger or video creator off the hook, but the FTC goes after the advertiser, not the endorser. So
Okay, cool. Well, at the same time too, it's like, you know, what happens if we kept that dress, or what happens if we had an affiliate account with that mm-hmm. merchant, right? It's like
Samsung sponsors the Samsung Bloggers Lounge, and they will sometimes give free phones to the bloggers in the Bloggers Lounge at South by Southwest. But before they give that phone, they make the bloggers sign an agreement that lists everything that they're supposed to do. So Samsung is covering themselves contractually as best they can before they give the phone.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's... In the video, I see that, but if it's something where, like, I mean, for Lizzie Bennet, we don't call stuff out. We don't go like, "Hey, I'm wearing this dress from Zara," right? But if we said hypothetically did an affiliate account with Zara and linked to the dress below as like, "Hey, you want to see? You know, this is Lizzie's dress," and of course our audience wants to know. Not saying they're all going to buy these things, but they want to know these things, so they're going to click over just out of curiosity, you know, and maybe 1% of them will click over buy the dress, and maybe we get a percentage of that. So where does the disclosure happen when you're trying to present something like us? It's supposed to be very seamless, right? A seamless experience. Like, where do you put that? You put that, you know, in description, maybe? I mean, I'm still thinking about it. Like, trying to think of where that goes. So,
what I've done with my...
it's kind of like writers, right? The Writers Guild, you're supposed to be listed in the credits. What if your show doesn't have any credits?
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those things where the next show I have coming out, it's like, The managers were like, "You have to list these people in credits," and I'm just like, "How about I will list them in credits if there are credits?"
There is a problem that you have to solve, right? Do you throw the credits on at the end of the video, or what do you do? And I think in the case of the affiliate links, you know, what I do is I just put it very clear that this link, you know, click here to buy this on Amazon affiliate link, so people are aware of that, and to some degree, it might even help. Promote further sales, because if people know that going to buy that dress will benefit you as, you know, through a commission without them having to contribute additionally to it, that could work. Adam Carolla does this on some of his podcasts, where he asks people to go to the show page, click on the Amazon link so that he can get a cut of the sale and help promote the show while you're purchasing things you would have bought anyhow. You know, so maybe they're, especially for you, I mean, I think with the Kickstarter experience here, I think if people knew that you could get some financial benefit from buying that dress, I'm sure they would probably do it in droves, even more than they already are.
Probably. Granted, the dresses we've always worn have been kind of pricey, so I don't know if they would.
Well, it's good for you if they do buy them, right? It's a higher percentage of the...
True, but like, you know, as Tim said, these are college kids who don't have... a whole ton of money.
I sense a second show here that we could talk about how to create a show about doing that look for less. But we'll maybe save that for our next edition. But this was great. We covered a lot of ground today on Behind the Video. We thank you all for joining us. We had a bunch of people tuning in as well. You can catch this show every Sunday morning at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific time, depending on where you are located on in the planet. We have a behindthevideo.com website you can go to watch us live, and there's a link there where you can call in to the show as well. So definitely do that. You can find us on iTunes and on Stitcher and on YouTube. We are everywhere, so tune in. We've been seeing more of you downloading us every week, so we thank you for that. Tim, where can people find you?
Oh, muted.
Tim muted himself.
Sorry, at One Tim Street on Twitter. There we go.
And Bernie Sue, where can people find you and the Lizzie Bennet Diaries and the Kickstarter and everything else you've been doing?
Well, I'm speaking of a link in the video, the Kickstarter, so you can find it there. But you can just look up Lizzie Bennet Diaries on Kickstarter and you'll find it. It's one of the most popular things on that site right now. But you can, they can find me on Twitter at Bernie Sue, just my name, like that. Ooh. no underscores or anything. And then Lizzie Bennet Diaries is on YouTube. YouTube.com/LizzieBennet, and check the show out.
Well, congratulations on all of the success. We've been really excited for you, and we will continue to do that. And we thank you for taking a little bit of time out of your Sunday morning to come and talk to us too. So I'm Lon Seidman. You can find me at lonseidman.com or Lon Seidman on Twitter. And this show is a wrap.
stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JasonPerrier. Behind the Video is a production of 8th Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.